Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And welcome to Who's a Good Dog, the podcast where I ask, how good are dogs? I'm Kate Lever, journalist and author of the book Good Dog. My co-host, Bert, has been known to eat cardboard boxes during the recording of this show because he is a dog. On each episode of Who's a Good Dog, I talk to someone lovely about their dog and find out what sorts of household objects they like to destroy. Today, I'm chatting to journalist and author, Anna Codrarado. Anna is a crusader for freelance rights and a legend among those of us who work from home. She's published a book called You're the Business, which is essential reading for anyone building a successful career on their own. Her newsletter, Lance, is a very welcome, very insightful arrival in my inbox every week. And she hosts a podcast called Is This Working? With her best mate, Tiffany Philippou. And once wrote an article about a woman accused of hoarding bunny rabbits. She also made an extraordinary podcast about the HBO show The Investigation. In it, she pays tribute to her friend Kim Wall, the brilliant Swedish journalist who was murdered aboard a submarine while researching a story in 2017. By interviewing the investigators on the case, the directors of the television show, and also Kim's generous, courageous parents. Throughout all of this work, Anna's had a four-legged companion called Dolly, who she adopted when she lived in New York. She also, I'm told, accidentally adopted a second dog during lockdown in the UK. Anna, welcome. It's so nice to see you. You have two dogs, Dolly and Jack, and I want to hear about them both. But I think let's start with Dolly, because I feel like that's what she'd want, given that she was the first in your household. So can you start by giving us a physical description of Dolly?
Hi, and thank you so much for having me. And you are spot on. Dolly would have it absolutely no other way than to be top billing. So Dolly is, I'd say she's a large, small dog.
yep.
And she's about between 10 and 11 kilos. She's mixed breed. I have had her DNA tested and she is predominantly in the terrier family. Mm-hmm. She's got a black coat with tan accent. So she's got this, she has the sort of double dog eye, the eyebrows.
Oh, yeah. I love them.
Which, as I'm sure maybe you already know this, but they are sort of, it's like an evolutionary thing. It's so that when those dogs are asleep, it looks like they have eyes for their.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So she has little tan eyebrows and a tan snout and a sort of a tan belly, which is increasingly becoming gray and grayer because she is 13. She's going to be 14 in May. She's got quite a barrel chest and spindly little legs. So people who are scared of dogs think that she's a Doberman puppy.
Yeah,
and yep. And but then also a lot of people think she's a sort of overweight Manchester Terrier because she's got that kind of coloring and the kind of head shape. So yeah, that's Dolly. She walks with a bit of a limp because she's got really severe arthritis and she's very sassy. She's got a huge personality. And yeah, I mean, I'm just so happy to be here because I really could talk at length just about Dolly. We haven't even gone to Jack yet, but just about Dolly.
I love the thoroughness of that description. I mean, I've seen pictures. I've seen many pictures. But, you know, I feel that anyone who hasn't could really picture Dolly. And that's what it's all about. I'm obviously going to get onto some more questions about Dolly, but just quickly, because I literally have the envelope for a DNA test for Bert, my dog, in another room. Like, we haven't done it yet because you have to put the little swabs in his cheek and I'm just picking a moment where he feels ready to do that. But the DNA company that we went through promises there's like a 99% chance that we'll find a relative of Bert's. Did you find a relative of Dolly's?
No. I don't know what company you use, but maybe I need to redo Dolly's DNA. So a bit of background on Dolly quickly is just that I adopted her when I lived in New York, and she actually came from Puerto Rico. And I did her DNA test in the UK, and the company said that it couldn't promise the same level of accuracy because I think its database was in Europe rather than, so I don't know. Also, I had originally done the DNA test because I was going to write a story about it. And I'd been approached by a outlet, and then the business of Dolly being adopted in America, and the newspaper said it was all too complicated.
Too complicated.
A story. So I wasn't told that I would be able to find relatives.
I'm like torn between being skeptical about it and deeply, deeply hopeful, and spend most of the time much closer to the hopeful end. And I think my boyfriend's currently trying to manage my expectations because we got Bert when he was quite little from Battersea, and I am already sort of picturing a dramatic reunion between him and his brothers and sisters or parents. And then I raised the idea of whether he'd had any children, and Jono was like, you need to settle way down because I don't think this is what they mean. So I'll report back.
No, so it's really, I mean, I'm inherently skeptical because this test, Dolly's test, came back and said that there were three breeds that they could identify, and then the rest was just mixed breed, about 60% mixed sort of all the dogs. But the three main breeds were Chihuahua, Bull Mastiff, and Sharpei.
Oh my God. And then 60% dog.
And then 60% dog. And okay, I can see the Chihuahua. But the Bull Mastiff and the Sharpei, I mean, I think it's because those are breeds that have such a long history that it's kind of almost impossible that if you have a mixed breed dog, it wouldn't have some.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But anyway, so who knows? Who knows?
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have come from the worlds of film, television, music, food, comedy, and podcasting. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Can you take me back to those first few days and weeks with Dolly in New York? What was she like? And did she take a bit of time to settle in with you guys?
Dolly is the perfect dog. And my experience of adopting her, I think, was atypical. So first of all, also, I do want to say I used to be terrified of dogs. I was not a dog person. Yes, I was scared of dogs. I got chased by quite a few strays when I was younger and also in my memory, it was a bite, but maybe it was more of a nip. I got bitten by a dog when I was quite young. The dog actually looked quite a lot like Dolly. But I was really, really scared of dogs. And it was my boyfriend at the time who really wanted dogs and somehow kind of got me to come around to the idea. And that's why we adopted Dolly. I didn't know anything about dogs. I did know enough that I wanted to adopt and not buy a puppy. And I sort of had my heart set on a 2-year-old dog. You know, something really cute. I'd seen a picture on the shelter's website of this. It still was a mixed breed, but it kind of had, I don't know, it was had maybe some kind of maybe collie or something in it. This kind of like beautiful golden dog with these floppy ears. It was called Buttercup. And
perfect.
Yeah. And I'd gone to the shelter with the hopes of adopting Buttercup. But A, Buttercup was just being signed over to somebody else as I arrived. But then when I spoke to the shelter, I kind of explained my lifestyle and they said they really encouraged me to think about getting an older dog and kind of said, oh, how about this dog here? And that and there was Dolly. I hadn't even noticed her at the it was kind of like an event for adopting. So when I brought her home, she took a bit of time just to kind of settle, but she was, you know, Dolly. Only now in her older years has she started barking. She's really found her voice now in her golden years. She never barked. She just settled really quickly. I think I was I still felt very nervous around her because I just didn't know what I was doing. And I think also kind of bought all the wrong things and was trying to get her to play with toys because I thought all dogs must play with toys. And I had no idea that, you know, some dogs like different types of toys, you know, they like to play tug, whereas others want to play fetch and all of this stuff. And the Dolly, I mean, she's never really been one to play that much, but she's got that terrier in her where she just wants to like shake to kill.
Kill stuff. Yeah.
She wants to kill stuff. Whereas Jack, our other dog, he's all about playing tug of war and fetch, classic Labrador retriever.
Absolute classic Labrador behavior.
Yeah. So, and I didn't know any of this. And so this is the thing I was thinking about actually, as I was kind of thinking about coming on today, that I truly believe that much like you and the whole ethos of your book and this podcast that, you know, dogs save us. I completely believe that. But my experience, interestingly, with Dolly is that as someone who I'm quite an anxious person. And when I first got Dolly, she did not alleviate my anxiety. She made it so much worse not because of anything she was doing, just because of, I didn't know what I was doing, but it just, it got a lot easier. And the biggest thing that I learned very quickly in those first few weeks was that the whole reason I had been scared of dogs was because I had no idea how to speak dog. And I didn't know how to read their body language. I had this idea in my head, like a lot of people who are scared of dogs, that dogs are incredibly unpredictable and you never know what they're thinking. And sure, we don't really know what they're thinking, but actually they display all of their emotions and they are speaking to you. It's just in their language. And if we want to live with them, it's on us to learn their language. So I through YouTube and reading blogs and stuff, I really took the time to learn about dog body language. And then that made the whole thing so much easier. And I was able to kind of understand what Dolly was trying to tell me.
Oh, that's so nice.
And yeah, and it's been so interesting because now, I mean, I would still be scared of a big stray dog. But I feel really comfortable around all kinds of dogs. And I also feel very confident being able to read a dog's body language. And I know which dogs to be wary of and which dogs are fine. But yeah, back to the original question, she settled in really, really easily. And if anything, it kind of set me up on a sort of, I don't think that's a typical situation. I think more often than not, there's quite a long period of recalibrating and adjusting.
You have just done the perfect segue unknowingly to my next question, because I was going to ask what Dolly felt about her relocation to England and whether she picked up any sort of typically English enemies like squirrels and foxes and the general sort of countryside landscape.
That is a great question. Dolly is so adaptable. And I only really realized this when we took in Jack, who is such a routine. He needs his routine. At 5 o'clock, he is coming and he is asking to go outside. I won't even use the W word because he might be on the other side of the door. Dolly's very, very adaptable. She's never been one to chase squirrels or birds. She loves fox poo, however.
Yeah. It's a delicacy,
It's a delicacy,
some dogs.
Exactly. She is in her element. She loves to find it, eat it, to roll in it. I mean, when I first got her, I lived in an apartment. And in many ways, Dolly is very well suited to the city and still to this day. So now actually, so not only have I moved her back to England, I then moved out of London and into the countryside. She doesn't love walking on grass. She prefers to be on the pavement.
Oh, bless her.
But no, just very adaptable dog, very kind of happy to be wherever. I mean, one thing also with Dolly is that she gets bored of the same walking routes quite quickly, and she will really dig her heels in, and she wants to kind of go where she wants to go. And she doesn't like walking in the dark. So in the winter, it's quite problematic where we are, really, where we take the dogs for walks. It's pretty much kind of pitch black. I mean, obviously even we struggle to walk them in the dark, but Dolly doesn't actually want to walk in the dark at all. So she'll kind of step outside, and once you can't see the streetlights anymore, she digs her heels in and wants to go home. So it's less the sort of move from America to England, and it was more the transition from the city to the countryside that seems to have kind of brought up some of these quirks for her. But on the whole, she absolutely loves it. She loves that we now have a garden, and she's constantly outside sunbathing, and she just moves around. She follows the sun patches throughout the garden, and I have a little outside bed for her, and I'm just constantly dragging it around so that she can recline comfortably in the sunshine.
I mean, one of my favorite activities is actually watching Bert seek out the sun, because he does the same thing, but I think he is not very good at regulating his own temperature, like physically but also just logistically. So he'll sit in the sun for so long that he suddenly gets really overwhelmed and hot and has to go and flop dramatically somewhere cool where he can have, you know, tiles or something underneath his little belly. And he, like, honestly, I could watch him all day because it is so comical. He flops dramatically into the sun and just, like, is living his dream. And then all of a sudden it's like, he's like, oh, shit, it's hot. And he, like, waddles off urgently into the shade and flops so dramatically, often accompanied with a very world-weary sigh.
Dolly is exactly the same, and this is kind of compounded by the fact that she's got a black coat. Not only has she overheated, but that coat is keeping that heat in. So I do try to regulate her temperature for her, because she can't seem to do it very well for herself, and encourage her to either stay in the shade, or when it's really hot, I don't let her outside because she can't be trusted to not.
I take away Bert's sunshine rights on really hot days because he doesn't know what's good for him. I give him a little ice cube and I make him sit in a cool corner in the kitchen. Because, this is the relationship we have with dogs, is that sometimes they need us to step in and do some basic common sense on their behalf.
They do.
I feel like I've got a really nice picture, not only of Dolly's aesthetic, but her kind of vibe. So with that in mind, let's hear about Jack, who is dog number two. Now, what you said to me about your second dog is that you, quote, accidentally adopted him during lockdown. I am familiar with the accidental procurement of pets because my stepdad allegedly accidentally brought home a cat called Eddie, and then some months afterwards my mum accidentally brought home a cat called Martha. And while I can't endorse the bringing of cats into the household, I do understand how it happens. So can you please explain to me how Jack accidentally came into your life?
So we knew Jack from the dog park because, like any self-respecting dog owner, especially one who lives in an urban area and walks their dog in the same parks, you get to know all of the other dogs around there. And this is partly because, I mean, in my opinion, this is sort of part of dog owner etiquette, but this is also my own introversion that kind of plays into this as well. I know all of the dogs' names, but I don't know any of the owners' names, and I yes. don't know anything about the owners' lives. I also, more often than not, kind of like it that way. But so I knew Jack because he is a big Labrador Golden Retriever cross, and he's a big boy. And his owner was quite an eccentric older lady, and they were very, very sweet together. And she loved to tell everyone who would stop to chat to them that Jack was a failed guide dog.
Yeah.
And so we knew all about Jack, but we had no idea about anything of the owner's life. I actually didn't even know her name when all of this kind of happened. And it was March 2020. Lockdown hadn't been announced, but it was in the week running up to it, which I think was one of the most fraught weeks of the pandemic, when we didn't know what was going on. Everything felt very scary, very unclear. And the rumors kind of going around that London was going to be locked down and all of these things. Anyway, we were walking into our flat one night when our neighbors were coming out of theirs, and we knew our neighbors quite well. They also have a dog called Polly.
Polly and Dolly.
Polly and Dolly, who Dolly and Polly did actually really love each other. And they were walking out of their flat one night, and I heard them on the phone, and they were talking about an ambulance. And we knew them well enough to kind of, you know, ask them if everything was okay. And they said, "Do you know Jack from the dog park?" And we said, "Yeah, of course." And they said, "Well, his owner has been taken ill, so we're going to go around and help." And we sort of had a chat about it. And I said, "Well, if you need someone to look after the dog, we'd be more than happy to do that." And it's not that I didn't mean it. Of course I meant it. Yes. But it was one of those things that you say and you think that you're not going to be taken up on the offer. It was an intended offer, but I just did not think I would be taken up on it. Half an hour later, they basically turn up with Jack. And the poor sweet dog with his ball in his mouth, because Jack is very, very attached to his orange and blue rubber ball, turn up with Jack. And we're still living in a small flat in Hoxton. We've also already got Dolly, of course. And so Jack's there, and it was supposed to be for a couple of nights. But what transpired, without having to kind of go into sort of too much detail, is that the owner actually had early onset dementia and wasn't capable of looking after Jack anymore. And then, of course, also we found ourselves in lockdown on top of everything else as well. And so because Jack was a guide dog, he was kind of their property, or they were able to kind of get involved in this. And so temporarily, we were sort of his kind of extended foster parents for the pretty much the duration of all of the lockdowns. And so, yeah, we kind of just held on to him. And the best thing I did was, a couple of days into this, before they did announce the lockdown, I sort of realized, okay, this dog is not going anywhere anytime soon. So I rushed to my nearest Argos whilst it was still open and got the biggest dog bed I could find. Because the poor dog had nowhere to sleep, because Dolly is a quarter of his size. And Dolly has excessive dog beds, and she had spare dog beds, but they still weren't big enough for him. So yeah, that's kind of how we ended up in our lives. We had absolutely no intention of adopting, he was 45 kilos at the time.
Whoa, that's a whopper of a dog.
He was a bit overweight. He's now 37 kilos, but he's a big boy. We had no intention of adopting such a large dog, particularly whilst living in a flat in London. But yeah, it was a quite difficult situation, really, because it was really, really sad to sort of know that he wasn't able to kind of continue on in his home, where he had been really very loved, but it wasn't possible anymore. So yeah, that's how he came into our lives.
How did Dolly feel about Jack's arrival?
So the first day when Jack first got there, and Jack is very, very sweet, and he immediately figured out that Dolly is the queen and that this is Dolly's house.
Rightly so, yes.
It's just Dolly's world and we just live in it. And Jack understood that order very quickly. Dolly's allowed on the sofa, not least because she can't be stopped from going on the sofa. and she was on the sofa, and Jack kind of just, he wasn't even trying to get on it, because he does a very sweet thing where Jack knows he's not supposed to go on furniture, but he does ask by putting his chin on furniture and kind of looking up at you. But he hadn't even actually done that. He sort of just kind of came up to us and sort of looked at us, and Dolly snapped at him to kind of say, no, go away. But once they settled their hierarchy amongst the two of them very quickly, it became really peaceful. There was never actually a problem. They sort of started out as Dolly tolerating him, and she went from tolerating him to then becoming actually, Jack really brought out a very playful and youthful side to Dolly. I honestly think that he has prolonged her life by being around, because he's kind of brought out this sort of, she's just so much more playful than she ever was before. Then they kind of moved into this phase of, they were sort of very much mirroring each other. So even if she was lying on the sofa, he was in the same position as she was on the floor.
Too much to cope with.
I know. Now they're best friends. When we walk them, they walk next to each other really sweetly. Dolly walks at a much slower pace than Jack. And if she kind of falls behind, he stops. And so my partner and I kind of, we tend to walk them. They have at least one walk a day where it's the four of us. Yeah. And if the person walking Jack is ahead, Jack will stop and he'll turn and he'll wait for Dolly to catch up. So yeah, they're best friends now.
Oh, that is so precious. I think Jack sounds like an absolute sweetheart, and I'm very happy that he came into your lives. I also think it's really funny that you told me that he's a failed guide dog, because when I was writing my book about dogs, I was looking for stories of dogs who've changed and sometimes saved human lives. And that led me to basically speaking to and hearing about a lot of Labradors and Golden Retrievers, because they are usually chosen as breeds that are really good at learning things and, you know, committing to a job such as guiding a blind person really diligently, and they've got the intelligence and kind of the sweet nature and all of that. So I did some work with Guide Dogs New South Wales and Guide Dogs Australia back home to find some case studies. And in that process, I think I used the phrase failed guide dog to talk about a dog who had dropped out of guide dog school to become a court companion dog. So she provides comfort and solace to witnesses and victims of crime, which I think is just such a beautiful job. So when I referred to her as a failed guide dog, I got in all sorts of trouble, because that was very reductive and disrespectful of me. But I also just think it's so sweet, because usually the dogs who do not complete their guide dog training, and there's quite a lot of them, it's quite a small percentage of dogs that actually become professional guide dogs, because it's a very difficult job, because they are, I mean, it can be a life and death situation. It's usually because they're too cuddly or too enthusiastic or too motivated by praise and social activity with human beings. And that sounds sort of like Jack is, I mean, he's too sweet for the guide dog life.
He is. And to your point, I am aware that I should be calling him a career changer.
Oh yeah, that's the phrase.
But to meet Jack and to know him is to know that he is a failed guide dog. He's so obsessed with his toys, in particular with balls, that it's too distracting for him. And also, to your point about how smart they are, I mean, Jack is now, I mean, his new, he's using all of his smarts against us, because he's I mean, the sweetest boy, but also, I mean, he thinks he's sneaky, but he never gets away with it. So he's smart enough to know that Dolly's quite fussy with her food, and in her older age, she takes her time with her food. She'll pick at her breakfast and come back to it throughout the day. So more often than not, her food is still in her bowl throughout her day. And Jack knows that that's Dolly's bowl and he's not to touch it. But if he thinks that we are in the garden or somewhere out of earshot, he's straight in there with his nose in the bowl. And it's always when he thinks that we aren't around. And same with, he knows he's not supposed to go on the sofa, but we will go to bed and then he'll wait and he will think we have gone to sleep, and he will go downstairs and the whole house can hear when he's on the move, and he goes straight out and sits on the sofa.
So he's smart, but not that smart.
Yeah. He's smart in the sense that he knows that he's not supposed to do stuff and he's going to try his luck, but he's not quite so crafty as to actually be able to get away with it.
Yeah. Plus, he might also not be sort of aware of his size and therefore the sounds he makes when he moves around. I think most dogs are not aware of their own size. And that also might play into his friendship with Dolly, because it sounds like she's the smaller dog, but she's in charge.
Oh, yeah. And she thinks she's bigger than she is.
Oh, yeah. Bert thinks he's enormous. Like, he tries to take on... I mean, we went for a walk once, a really long walk with Bert, and we were walking past Buckingham Palace, and we went round the corner into sort of like, oh, I don't know where it is, but whatever park is around there. And like, I think maybe a dozen horses with really fancy, whoever they are, soldiers or knights, but you know, like frightening regalia, those whole sort of red jackets and high helmets and swords and all of that. They came round the corner, and Bert was ready to take on the whole lot of them. So he thinks he could be maybe bigger than an entire, you know, parade of horses. So who knows what Dolly thinks and what Jack. Jack probably thinks that he's like a petite dog capable of sneaking around the house without being detected. And if he likes that version of himself, then all power to him. Bless him.
They have very different personalities, the two of them. Dolly, I think she probably would like it if maybe we left the house a bit more than we did. Whereas Jack, he would rather that we weren't working and that we were giving him our full attention.
Yeah.
All day, every day.
Oh, so sweet. Well, I mean, it's good though that you don't have either of them who seem to have separation anxiety,
because Jack
that
does.
Would be so. Oh, he does.
Well,
oh.
It's not. I don't think it's so. We've had a trainer, and she doesn't actually think it's separation anxiety. She thinks it's that he's never, and it's still a problem for us, because we both work from home. We're both massive homebodies. And we had been living in a pandemic for
the last
2 years. And the whole time we've had Jack, it's only now that finally we're kind of coming out of this pandemic stuff. The sort of diagnosis was, it's very unlikely to be true separation anxiety. It's more likely that he was as a guide dog, obviously, they're trained to be with their person all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
And then after he came out of guide dog school and went to live with his previous owner, she was with him all the time as well. Mm. So he's kind of never had the opportunity to learn how to be independent. And he's now 7. So it's just kind of compounded.
Yeah.
And so we have slowly been trying to teach him and train him, but it's been a really, really long and difficult process. And the most we've been able to leave him on his own was about 10 or 15 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
so
hard.
It is really hard. And then I was really hoping that Dolly would calm him down and that all of this. But actually, when we do try to leave them by themselves, we have to separate them, because Dolly doesn't have any of these problems. But once Jack starts to get agitated and starts barking, then Dolly kind of gets up and she's like, what's the fuss about? Let me have a look. I'll have a go at barking too. So yeah, that has definitely been really, really challenging. It helps that we work from home and that we, you know, more often than not, we kind of can bring him, and we've got family who live by, and we've always managed to find someone to look after him. But that was something that's definitely been the sort of the biggest challenge, more so than, so Dolly has really bad arthritis and has a lot of medical issues, but this separation anxiety this kind of inability to leave him by himself is, I'd say, our biggest challenge with our dogs.
Okay, I will let you get on with your life and your afternoon in just a moment, but I'll just ask you some quick fire questions. Now, you can answer these for one dog, both dogs, whatever you like. Where do the dogs sleep at night?
Well, it's musical beds actually here, because they don't sleep in our bed. Dolly, because she wants to sleep in our bed, but with us not in it. Jack would love to, but he's just too big. So normally the evening starts with Dolly sleeping in the office, which is directly opposite the bedroom, but all the doors are open, and she's in Jack's bed. But then she'll move into the dog bed in the bedroom, and Jack will kind of move perhaps on the floor next to the bed. And then now, more recently, this business of sneaking down to the sofa. So there's a lot of there is a lot of movement at night.
What's their favorite food?
Jack loves cheese.
Yeah, a classic.
And Dolly loves chicken and peanut butter.
Oh, lovely. I mean, those are probably the top three dog favourite foods across the world. Do they have any outfits, costumes, or accessories?
So I once dressed Dolly up as a pumpkin for Halloween. I've also dressed her up as, this is when I still lived in New York and you can get all sorts of amazing costumes. Dolly had this sort of spider costume with multiple black spider legs, and it worked really well with her coat. I have not yet managed to find, but I want to get a lion's mane for Jack.
Yes, you must. What's the funniest thing they've ever done?
Oh, gosh. So, okay, Dolly, there's like a particular angle where you can take a photo of her where she just looks utterly ridiculous. It's very, it's really hard to describe like with words, but you can kind of get this, like, it's almost the equivalent of like a human sort of like double chin where your head looks like a thumb kind of photo. Yeah, whereas like there's a particular angle you can get at Dolly where she has one of those pictures. She also, this is kind of, I guess, less, it's funny in the sort of way of like disbelief, but she more often than not will go out into our garden now that we have a veggie patch, and she will kind of, she'll go up to the veggie patch. She'll sort of look back at us and we'll say like, no, Dolly, don't go in there. And she'll just kind of step one foot and then the other and climb into the veggie patch and either do a wee or start digging or just have a nap amongst the vegetables.
Yeah.
And Jack, I mean, in that kind of like, this is, I mean, it's massive toilet humor, but with dogs, I mean, you kind of have to embrace it. A picture came up on my phone of like memories of this time last year when it was sort of like the first flush of spring, and I'd snapped a really nice photo of the sort of the hills around us, and there's just like Jack in the corner doing a massive poo, like looking gormlessly at the camera.
Do you have plans to get any other dogs, accidentally or otherwise?
Ooh, I think yes. I mean, no active plans. But I just can't see my life without dogs in it. Do I want three dogs right now? Probably not. But is there a future where there are? I mean, I would love nothing more than to have a dog retirement home where all of the old dogs can come and live out their golden years. But that's not something I'm quite ready to do yet. But yeah, there are more dogs in my future.
Final question. What do you think makes your dogs happiest in life?
Jack is just, when we're all together and going on a walk and he gets to have his ball thrown for him. Dolly, a sunny day, an open back door where she can just go and lie in the sun and then come back in, demand to have her belly rubbed and given a treat and just have that on repeat.
Anna, thank you so much for talking to me about your dogs, your beautiful, perfect dogs. Please give them a cuddle for me.
Thank you. This was my utter delight.
I'm pleased. Thank you for listening to Who's a Good Dog. If you like the show, hit subscribe on your favourite podcast app and tell your friends at the dog park. If you didn't like it, keep it to yourself. And if you really, really liked it, I actually wrote a whole book about dogs. It's called Good Dog, celebrating the dogs who change and sometimes even save our lives. It's about my dog, Bert, and how he helped me through depression, and 10 other good dogs who've helped their people too. There's a border terrier called Sir Jack Sprattigus, who can fetch the landline phone in an emergency, a pug who looks like a loaf of bread when she lies down, and a schnoodle called Noodle who works in a dementia ward. Basically, if you like dogs, I can almost guarantee you'll like this book. This episode of Who's a Good Dog was produced by Arlie Adlington. Original music is by Luke Batt and the artwork is by Ryan Hodge. Moral support provided directly to me in the form of cuddles and snuffles by Bert the dog.
Who's a good dog?
You just heard a Stripped Media production.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.